This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Cave of Bones, a Lee Porn Chi and Manuelito novel, Book 3, by Ann Hillerman, performed by Christina Delane. Annie Rainsong knew that today she would die, and that she deserved to. She never should have left her vision sight, but she was cold, restless, bored, hungry, and ready to be done with this outdoor stuff. She wanted a beer and a cigarette, or at least a shower and a sandwich. No, two sandwiches. She knew she should have been back at base camp by now. Leaving her vision sight had been a bad, bad idea. The stupid piles of rocks that marked the trail blended into the darkness now. Nothing looked familiar, or everything looked like something she had seen before. Nothing looked safe. Her head ached, her feet hurt from the ugly new hiking boots. She wanted to stop moving, be done with this. Her Shimasane had always told her not to complain, only to be grateful. She pictured her grandmother's face and remembered the warm smell of the blue corn cake she had fixed for breakfast. It made her feel like crying, so Annie swore out loud instead. She saw what looked like a cave up ahead and directed the weak beam of her flashlight into the lava. She would climb there, she decided, and hope there weren't any dead bugs or bat poop to creep her out. The old ones had lived in caves, hadn't they? Maybe she'd be lucky enough to fall asleep and die. She'd heard of that happening. She hiked toward it, relieved to have a destination, even though the blister on the back of her left heel rubbed against the stiff boot every time she took a step. She felt less lost now. Maybe it would be even warmer in there. Mr. Cruz and Mrs. Cooper had told her to stay out of caves because of hibernating bats and because the caves might have been used by the old ones and contain bones or gifts for the dead. She decided it didn't matter now. This whole stinking program was a farce, and she was as good as dead anyway. When she got to the cave, she'd take the boots off. Who cared what Mr. Cruz said? He was a jerk. She never believed in this vision stuff anyway, but she played along. It was better than being on probation for a year, and all the bull that went with that. At least, that's what she'd thought when she let her mother talk her into participating. As she limped closer, she realized that there were big lava boulders around the mouth of the cave, making it hard to see at this angle. She was lucky she'd found it. Lucky? Cooper said the experience out here changed people, but if it actually gave her some luck, she'd be amazed. She started to climb, struggling against the angle of the hillside, slipping on patches of icy snow she hadn't seen in the cloud-covered night. Before she reached the top, she was practically crawling, using numb fingers to help pull herself to the cave. Annie made it to the crest of the slope and straightened up, catching her breath. She remembered the pack rat nest she'd seen at Grandma's place, out past the Hogan, when life was better, before her Shimasane died and her brother had his accident and everything changed. Would the cave be a good place for a pack rat? Or for Shush, a bear snoozing off her fall fat and waiting to emerge in the spring? Maybe with some cubs? She didn't like the idea of disturbing a sleeping bear. The flashlight's beam reflected off the black rocks at the cave's mouth and illuminated wavy white lines and stick figures before the beam disappeared into the darkness. The figures made her think of something a little kid would draw, simple light marks on the dark stone. Mrs. Cooper had mentioned that they might see something like this, and told the girls not to touch them. Annie ran her finger over a spiral. The image captured the moon's milky light. Cool, she thought. The pictures looked like something her brother might make. She could hear Mother telling him not to draw on the walls. Maybe this little brat's mom told him the same thing. To get the flashlight to shine inside the cave, she had to sink to her knees. The tremor in her hand made the faint beam dance against the blackness. She inched her way toward the entrance, the light preceding her like bad news. She saw nothing threatening. The light bounced off her wrist, and Annie Rainsong glanced at her forbidden tattoo, the skull her mother hated. She'd always thought it was cool, but now she looked away and used her light to search the cave, finding no rats or rats' nests or anything that looked bear-like. She sat on the rock ledge at the entrance of the cave, put down her flashlight, pulled up the collar on her jacket, and shoved her hands in the pockets. She wasn't even hungry or thirsty anymore, only bone cold and scared and ready to die. Maybe there was a bear in the very back of the cave, where her light didn't go. Maybe the bear would find her and eat her or feed her to the cubs. That would be all right, she thought. Better than having her own mom yell at her for being a screw-up. Better than having Mrs. Cooper tell her she'd messed up the whole trip for the group by not following the rules. Everyone cared about the rules. Nobody cared about her. The cave would be a hard place for Mr. Cruz to find her, but it would be a safe place to die. She was glad those big rocks blocked most of the entrance. They would keep animals out, unless something was already inside. The cave smelled funny. She didn't like the thought of a coyote finding her. It was bad enough when she heard them howling, and she remembered that time when she was little, and she and grandmother had come across the sheep, or what was left of it, that the coyotes had just killed. Annie started to relax. The cave was safer than that stupid, flimsy tent they gave her. She was okay here, she told herself. She heard the sound of her own breathing and the beat of her heart pushing blood up to her ears. She leaned back, feeling the cold stone wall through her coat, staying close to the entrance. It bothered her that she couldn't see what was beyond the beam of her flashlight, but being outside bothered her even more. She would wait for the sunrise, and as soon as it got light, she'd start to yell for Mr. Cruz, or go back to hiking, watching for those stupid towers of rocks, the Cairns or something, to find the dumb campsite. Annie Rainsong took pride in her toughness. Nobody in school, when she went to school, messed with her. Teachers left her alone, except for some Bilagana do-gooders. If any adults looked at her with pity because of her brother, she gave them a hard glare that said, "Hands off!" She'd sit in the cave and wait for a vision, or wait to die. Who cared about a stupid vision anyway? She could make that up if she had to. She readjusted her back against the sharp lava. It wouldn't be so bad to die out here, she thought. Kind of peaceful. She stretched her legs into the darkness. She had seen on TV that the cold made people sleepy, and then they died. Hydrophobia or something. She wouldn't mind that. Her mom would start to cry and beg forgiveness. Too late. Her chindi would hang about and bug her. Maybe they would leave her in the cave, wall up her body until it became a pile of bones. Or not find her at all. Then Mom would be really teed off. Annie stretched a little more. Her right foot encountered something hard, probably a rock. She adjusted her position, wishing she'd brought her sleeping bag instead of leaving it in the tent. Even with the cold, she felt better here. out of the wind, without the noise of the tent straps and fabric flapping. She saw the sliver of a moon as it rose over a river of darkness separating the clouds. It was Haich, winter, and the month of Nichtschitzo, a time when some creatures would rest and others would die. Either way, she thought, it's how my story plays out. She must have closed her eyes, because when she opened them again, the sky wore a tinge of pink. She remembered where she was and why in the next millisecond. On the next breath, she realized that her back and hips hurt, her stomach ached, and December's cold had seeped up through the little bones of her smallest toes, all the way to her knees, her spine, and the very top of her head. Even her hair was freezing cold. She shifted and wiggled her feet, glad that she had left her boots on because her stiff fingers would not have been able to deal with shoelaces. She pushed herself to sitting and glanced down to see what she had pressed against in the dark. Her screams echoed off the lava. 2. The trouble started simply enough, as many things do. Several weeks earlier, Captain Howard Largo had asked Officer Bernadette Manuelito if she would help the Rayma Navajo District with a little volunteer project. Officer Cheryl Jasper had signed up to do it. But then Jasper's daughter qualified for the finals in something at school, and the family had an opportunity to go to Albuquerque to cheer her on. Largo reminded Bernie that Officer Jasper had filled in at the Shiprock District 3 years before, when Bernie and Sergeant Jim Chee wanted time off together for their honeymoon. The Rayma Navajo were known for their independence, and if it hadn't been for clan ties traced back to Bernie's mother's mother, Cheryl Jasper might not have been as gracious about spending some of her precious vacation working in Shiprock. Bernie knew she owed her colleague a favor, and payback time had arrived.
What do I have to do?
Oh, nothing much, and it will get you outside. Hiking is involved, and Officer Jasper especially asked for you.
Largo's voice had a touch of the trickster in it.
I'm not making you do this, Manuelito, but I'm telling you it would be a darn good idea.
Don't say it will build my character.
You're already enough of a character.
That Largo hadn't volunteered the details seemed suspicious.
Sir, can you tell me more about what doing nothing much means?
Don't worry, Manuelito. You like being out of the office. Officer Jasper will fill you in.
Thanks. He picked up his phone, indicating the conversation was done. Chi planned to be away in Santa Fe for a few days, for intensive training at the New Mexico Law Enforcement Academy. Bernie's sister, Darlene, had been invited to attend a program for prospective students at the Institute of American Indian Arts, a college in Santa Fe. Even Mama would be gone. Her mother felt so well she planned to go to the Crown Point rug auction with her weaving student, Mrs. Big Man. So Bernie had agreed before she called Officer Jasper, and that was her first mistake. The Rayma Navajo in many ways considered themselves and their schools, police force, and jail separate from the larger Navajo Nation. They were physically separated, too. Their territory, which didn't adjoin the rest of the Navajo Nation, encompassed some 200 square miles of land interspersed with private holdings, creating what was known as the checkerboard because of the pattern it made on a map. Some of this land not owned by the Navajo had been deeded to the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railway for a route to Needles, California, but it was never used. It was open to anyone who could develop it under the Homestead Act of 1862, but somehow the government forgot to notify the Navajo families living in the area. After Bernie told Largo yes, she phoned Officer Jasper. They talked about Jasper's daughter's award, about Chi, about Bernie's mother, and about Darlene. Then Jasper laid out the bad news. Before she learned her daughter had won the trip, she had agreed to go out to talk to a group of Navajo girls participating in an outdoor program.
You mean make a speech?
Bernie felt her heart beat faster.
No, nothing as serious as that. It's not a big deal.
Jasper's voice sounded calmly reassuring.
You could do it in your sleep.
Where will the group be?
In the Malpais. They're camping at the Narrows. You'll like them. And the location is wonderful.
When?
Jasper gave her the time she was expected to speak, a few weeks in the future, and the phone number for the program's contact.
Can you call them and tell them I can't make it, but that you'll be substituting? They'll want to know a little about you so they can tell the girls.
Thanks, Bernie. You're the best.
Bernie would rather face a rampaging 300-pound drunk than gaze out at an audience. Every time she had to speak in public, become the center of attention, her mouth went dry, her palms started to sweat, and her stomach tied itself in a knot. Her heartbeat accelerated faster than when she was chasing a meth head. She could see Mama frowning at her, hear her chiding, in Navajo, of course.
It isn't good to puff yourself up. It isn't the Navajo way.
Bernie immediately called the woman in charge of the program, a Bilagana named Rose Cooper, to tell her that Officer Jasper had been called away on family business and wouldn't be able to talk to the girls. She did not volunteer to take her place. Cooper's disappointment resonated over the phone.
That's too bad. The girls look forward to her presentation each year. Do you know anything about our program?
I don't.
Well, we're based in Shiprock, and we do sessions all over the Four Corners. We work mostly with young people referred by the court system or schools, and sometimes parents at their wits' end. All of them are facing transitions and need some breathing room to figure out what comes next.
Cooper segued to the group of Navajo girls Officer Jasper had promised to speak to.
Some of them have had a brush with the law. Shoplifting, drinking, marijuana, fighting. Others were enrolled because their parents thought being outside, learning new skills, and testing themselves against nature would help them gain confidence. They are fine kids, full of ideas and energy. The program gives them a new way to view themselves and the world. We have a leader who talks to them extensively about you know, the importance of kinship, and about traditional Diné values as a way to find a path through the world. Bernie had heard of such programs. She'd even suggested one to Mama for Darlene as an antidote to beer and partying.
I could go on talking, but the best way to learn what we do is to come up and see for yourself. You'd be doing yourself a favor, and these girls need to see the police as the good guys, right?
Cooper didn't wait for her response. Some of them might even want to go into law enforcement, and they have to stay out of trouble to do that. And besides, the place where we set up the base camp is lovely. Do you know the area very well?
No, I'm from Shiprock, too.
Bernie remembered Cooper saying that was the program's headquarters. She waited to see what Cooper would come up with next.
When you get to the Wings and Roots campsite, you can take a trail to the top of a gorgeous sandstone mesa and look down on all that lava. The view is spectacular. No kidding.
I can't make it. I like to hike, and I'm all for helping girls grow into strong women. But speaking to groups isn't my strong suit.
Cooper chuckled.
So that's what it is. No problem. We're more like family than an audience. Just talk about what you do and how you got to be a cop, and then let the girls ask questions. Pretend they are your little relatives. That's what Cheryl, Officer Jasper, that's what she did last year. We're very casual here. No microphones or stuff like that.
Well, Bernie
searched her mental library for another excuse.
It's hard to make plans weeks ahead like this in police work. You never know when something might happen that you'll have to take care of as an officer.
Cooper injected her final argument.
We always grill hamburgers for lunch that last day of the course. Just come and eat with us. You don't have to say a word if we don't make you feel welcome. I imagine it will do you good to get out of that dang car. I know you officers are always driving around. You'll need to eat anyway. I'm not sure what my schedule will be. That sounded weak even to Bernie. Of course you aren't, but we'll count on you arriving late morning and figure out the details when you get here. See you soon. And with that, Cooper ended the call. The woman reminded Bernie of a non-Navajo version of Mama, with the same will of iron attitude toward getting what she wanted. But the place sounded beautiful, and burgers on the grill were one of her favorite foods. And how hard could it be to talk to girls about why and how she became a cop? She'd already had the conversation with Mama, Darlene, and Mama's neighbor, Mrs. Darkwater. Now, as she drove her green and white Navajo police SUV from Grants toward the Narrows campground where Cooper told her the program had set up base camp, she was having second thoughts. She stopped at the visitor center, a sunlit building perched at the edge of the park, for a map and some brochures. She scanned the information, stalling as she read, and hoping that some malfeasance, nothing serious, just any incident demanding her presence, might result in a call on her radio. But it remained frustratingly silent. She drove southwest on New Mexico 117, one of two paved highways that skirted the acres of lava flow. New Mexico 117 formed the border between El Malpais National Monument and the El Malpais National Conservation Area, threading its way between the lava and towering sandstone cliffs shaped by the forces of time. The conservation area abutted a Coma Indian reservation land, and like ancient trails across the lava, was dotted with prayer sticks, shrines, and the sacred unmentioned burials of Pueblo ancestors. This public land, administered by the Bureau of Land Management, also bordered the Rama Reservation and pockets of private land holdings. Most people driving through or stopping to hike simply called this whole area El Malpais, the Badlands in Spanish, leaving the changing jurisdictions as a matter of discussion for those who created the maps. But the checkerboard of state, federal, and tribal jurisdictions made law enforcement here complicated. Bernie knew El Malpais as Ye'itso Bidich Neniyesh, Navajo that translated to something like, where big gods' blood coagulated. The name came from one of the legendary adventures of the Hero Twins as they made the world safe for the people. The families of the Laguna, Acoma, and Zuni Pueblos had their own names and stories for the supernatural way in which this landscape came to be, wisdom that predated both the Spanish encounters and the American geological surveys. She'd read that scientists traced the lava to several different eruptions, including one of the most recent. The river of melted stone stretched 40 miles long, and from 5 to 15 miles across, a landscape of craters, cones, lava falls, and ice caves. The lava also created what geologists called tubes. As the molten lava flowed, the top layer started to harden, but the stone underneath remained liquid and flowed on. Over time, the unsupported top layers collapsed in places, creating access to underground caves. Bernie found this landscape both foreboding and beautiful, in the same way that she appreciated the good looks of a fearsomely strong bull in the chute at a rodeo. The Narrows campsite sat at the spot where the lava and the sandstone might have met if it hadn't been for the ribbon of pavement. Bernie climbed out of her unit. As Cooper had suggested, it felt good just to stand in this expansive landscape, and the promise of hamburgers sweetened the morning. The early December sun shared the blue sky with a few clouds. She'd heard a snowstorm was on the way, but she and the girls would be home before it hit. She approached the red tent, which from Cooper's description served as headquarters for the Wings and Roots camp. Two girls sitting at a picnic table focused on her now instead of whatever they'd been talking about. Beyond them,
A woman with reddish-brown braids was sitting in a camping chair with a book in her hands, next to a pile of backpacks, an orange water jug the size of a small barrel, and cloth bags stuffed with enough of whatever to let them stand straight. The scene resembled a typical campsite in the process of closing down, but the vibe was wrong. The girls looked worried as she approached, different from the typical expressions of civilians interacting with a cop.
"Hi," Bernie said. "Can you tell me where to find Mrs. Cooper?"
"She's on the mesa at the group campsite up there," said one of the girls at the picnic table, whose dark hair was pulled back in a ponytail. "Are you here because of Annie and Mr. Cruz?"
"I'm here because Mrs. Cooper invited me to talk to you guys."
The girl looked disappointed. A great way to start off with her audience, Bernie thought. The woman with the book approached her.
"Are you the officer who was giving the lecture?"
"That's me, Bernie Manuelito."
"A lecture?"
"Will I be speaking to the girls down here?"
"You better talk to Cooper about that." The woman had a touch of an accent, and there was a bit of attitude in her voice. "She's the one in charge of everything. I'll let her tell you what's going on. That's the way she likes it. I'm only the assistant, Lacey Mayfair."
"So Mrs. Cooper is up on the mesa?"
Bernie looked up at the sandstone cliffs that provided a backdrop to the campsite.
"Yes, that's right. You'll see the tent, our headquarters." Mayfair turned to the girls. "You two show her the way, then get back down here to help me. Understood?"
They nodded and headed off, Bernie following. The trail started at the edge of the parking lot and, after a rather steep ascent, became a flat, sandy, serpentine path, sometimes meandering close enough to the mesa's edge to offer a fine view of the lava field just across the highway. The girls walked single file, and Bernie trailed behind. A raven soared, a glistening dark shape against the vivid blue sky. The cool morning air was invigorating. Too bad all speaking requests didn't include a half hour of walking on a brilliant December day. The hike calmed her, pushing aside the anxiety of the pending talk. A woman with gray hair clustered in short, tight curls was pacing outside a tent as they approached the campsite. Bernie saw piles of equipment, neatly stacked, and the ring of rocks that surrounded a few pieces of blackened wood where a campfire had blazed. The woman glanced up and waved Bernie over.
"Officer Manuelito? Rose Cooper, good to see you. Thanks for coming."
Cooper looked at the girls.
"Get a drink and a snack if you'd like, and then wait up here for the closing circle."
"But Ms. Mayfair said..."
Cooper put a finger to her lips.
"I'm in charge, remember?"
The girls smiled and bounced away to join the other campers. The area seemed naturally intended for small group gatherings. A few girls stood in clusters or sat on rocks. Bernie counted 9, plus the 2 who had come up with her. All looked to be Navajo and in their early teens. Cooper had dark half-moons beneath her eyes.
"I'm glad you're here, officer. We've got a big problem."
"What's going on?"
"A girl and the assistant program director are lost out there in the lava somewhere."
"Tell me what happened."
"A girl, Annie Rainsong, wasn't where she should have stayed for her solo. Mr. Cruz brought the other 3 girls he was responsible for to base camp and then went out for Annie. They haven't come back."
Cooper's right hand made a pass through her curls.
"He knows this area, and he's had a lot of experience outdoors as a hiker and a guide. At first I didn't think much about it, but now I'm worried that something has happened to them."
"Tell me more about the girl and the solo."
"Each camper has a designated spot for her solo, her time alone, to reflect on her life. We tell them to stay at that spot overnight, and at dawn, Mr. Cruz, Ms. Mayfair, or I come to bring them back to base camp."
Cooper shook her head.
"Mr. Cruz saved Annie's spot for last, since she was closest to base camp."
"How long has he been gone?"
2 hours.
Cooper glanced toward the lava again, and when she turned back, Bernie saw the tears.
Have you looked for them?
Yes. I sent Mayfair and the two girls you just saw. They are a bit older, more responsible, out to search. I told them to stay along the trail from here to Annie's solo site, the place she was supposed to wait. They saw Annie's tent and sleeping bag right where they should be, but they didn't find any trace of her, and no clue as to where she or Dom might have gone.
Dom?
Domingo Cruz, the missing man.
Cooper looked at her watch, then back at Bernie.
Annie has been trouble from the start of the trip. Her mother leaned on me to accept her as a camper, and I should have said no.
Have you called the police?
No. I knew you were coming, and I figured... I should have called already, shouldn't I? But I know Dom can find his way out there. He's had so much experience, he'd be embarrassed if we made a big fuss for nothing. He's always taking pictures out there. I'm hoping he just got distracted, lost track of time.
How far was Annie's solo site from the base camp?
You mean how long would it take to get there?
Cooper didn't wait for Bernie to respond.
Maybe a 20-minute hike. Mr. Cruz mapped it out so each of our girls would get a flat place for her tent. We wanted Annie to have some solitude without being too far from help if she needed it, like all the girls.
Bernie did the math. Considering Cruz's experience, it wasn't too soon to notify the New Mexico State Police, the agency that activated operations to find people lost in the wilderness and bring them out safely.
You've done everything you can, Mrs. Cooper. It's time to put search and rescue on alert.
Whatever you think, officer.
Call me Bernie.
Okay, call me Rose.
Rose, hike down with me to my unit, and we'll use the radio to call this in. The police will need information from you.
Of course.
She turned to where the girls were clustered, motioned them over, and explained the situation.
While Officer Bernie and I talk to the police, you all gather up your belongings and make sure the campsite is spotless. Then finish your expedition journals. Any questions?
The girls looked at her in stunned silence.
Cooper led the way, setting a rapid pace. The trail didn't seem quite as beautiful now, even though the sun warmed Bernie's face and the air smelled subtly of the vanilla essence of ponderosa pine.
The older woman spoke first.
What kind of information will they need to start the search? I figure they'll want a physical description. Age, height, weight, what they were both wearing.
That's right. They will need the location of the girls' campsite and where Mr. Cruz was last seen. They'll ask if either of them had any medical conditions, seizure disorders, things like that.
Cooper made a sound that resembled a laugh, but without the happiness.
Annie is disorder on two legs. That girl demanded more attention than the rest of the group put together. But no medical issues. Of course, she's also a chronic liar.
Could she have disappeared on purpose?
Cooper took a moment to respond.
I guess so. But Annie had the most fear about doing the solo of any of the girls in the group. I can't imagine her trotting out in the lava by herself. She and her mother don't get along, but that's true of a lot of these girls. Annie doesn't have a history of running away. That's one of the questions we always ask.
You said Mr. Cruz is experienced out here.
He knows this place better than Mayfair or I do, and he understands our protocol. He should have hiked in by now, even if he wasn't able to find her. I'm worried that he might be hurt.
What did he have with him? Cell phone, water, food, first aid supplies?
Of course. I'm not sure about the phone. They don't work very well out in areas of the lava fields.
Bernie thought about how to best ask the next question and couldn't come up with a graceful way.
Do you have any reason to suspect that the two of them may have had a physical relationship? Some reason to run off, disappear together?
Never, not at all.
Bernie heard the flare of anger in Cooper's voice.
Dom is not that kind of man. He's not a pedophile, if that's what you're implying. I'd swear to that on my mother's grave. Some of these girls have been molested, traumatized, abused, you name it. How could you imply that I'd hire a person like that to work with them?
I'm not implying anything. I'm just asking a question.
They walked in silence. Bernie had explored a little in the Mount Baïs, and she knew that the lava could be treacherous. This time of year, the area might be hit by blizzards that buried the trails and their markers under snow. In the summer, the temperatures ratcheted to over 100 degrees. In all seasons, the dark rock was slippery, sharp, and filled with crevices and unexpected challenges. What looked like solid footing could turn out to be the thin dome of a lava bubble. As she followed the trail off the mesa top, Bernie was glad she had stowed her hiking boots in the unit. Her work shoes had been fine so far, but she expected to be walking this route several more times, and possibly climbing into the lava before the day was done. She would change after she radioed state police to tell them about the lost ones. Bernie had worked with searches on the reservation, and she thought about them as she hiked. On Navajo land, she had searched for competent adults who had been gathering pinon nuts in the mountains, or searching for missing livestock and lost their bearings. She had helped find older people with memory problems, and children who had wandered away from home and disappeared. The nation's 4 million acres on the Colorado Plateau encompassed terrain from the ponderosa-dotted slopes of the Lukachukai Mountains to the sprawling shale and sandstone emptiness of Monument Valley. It offered an abundance of places to get lost in. The Navajo Nation's own search and rescue unit sometimes requested help from the states of New Mexico or Arizona, depending on where the problem originated. Diné searchers reciprocated, working with teams in areas bordering the Navajo Nation. In the parking lot, Mayfair stood when Bernie and Cooper approached. Bernie unlocked her unit and opened the door.
"Wait!"
Cooper touched her arm.
"I see something."
3. Bernie followed Cooper's gaze and spotted a figure running toward them, long hair swaying back and forth as she moved.
"Annie?"
The director's voice rang out, and she sprinted to meet the girl, enclosing her in outstretched arms. The embrace continued for a while, and then the sobbing stopped. Cooper led the girl toward the police car. Annie looked pale and distraught, but she seemed uninjured. Cooper had her arm over Annie's shoulders, but the girl shrugged it off.
"Did you call the police on me?"
Cooper stepped back, and Bernie took charge. "Mrs. Cooper invited me to talk to your group, and when I got here, I learned that you and Mr. Cruz hadn't come back from the lava. You aren't in any trouble with me."
"Where's Mr. Cruz? He's not here?"
"Oh my God, I thought..."
"You thought what?" Bernie held the girl's gaze until Annie looked away.
"I thought he would be here. This is terrible."
Annie leaned against the hood of Bernie's unit and closed her eyes. Cooper moved next to the girl. She unhooked her water bottle, pressed it into Annie's hand. "Drink some of this now." After the girl drank, Mayfair helped Annie off with her pack and made her sit down. Cooper gave her assistant a faint smile. "Keep an eye on this one while we notify the police about Mr. Cruz. When she feels better, walk up to base camp with her and stay with the girls until I get done, and we can do our closing circle. They will be relieved to see that she's back and safe."
"I'm okay," Annie said. "I want to go now."
Bernie took a step toward the girl. "Annie, do you know where Mr. Cruz is?"
"No, why would I?"
The girl stared at the ground.
"Because he went to look for you." Bernie kept her voice gentle. "We need to talk about what happened, but first, Mrs. Cooper and I need to get the search going."
Mayfair looked at Annie. "Let's go. We can stop whenever you need to if you're tired."
"I'm not tired. I want to see my friends."
After they left,
Bernie made notes based on Cooper's description of Domingo Cruz. Navajo, 6 feet tall, about 200 pounds, 42 years old, black hair with a touch of gray at the temples, dark brown eyes, wearing a blue jacket with reflective trim. Anything else? Cooper straightened her shoulders.
Well, he has a black backpack with a bear bell he bought in Alaska to keep from surprising a grizzly, and hiking boots. He might have his red knit cap. It was below freezing this morning when he went out after Annie.
Bernie turned to Cooper and stared directly into the older woman's face, something she'd had to train herself to do in dealing with white people.
Was Mr. Cruz depressed, upset, worried about something?
Worried? Who doesn't worry? She ran a hand through her curls. We've got some budget issues, some staff changes in the works. He might have been a little preoccupied, you know. That's just part of life around here.
Is there any reason you can think of he would have chosen not to return?
Cooper's eyes widened.
He would never kill himself, if that's what you're asking.
Bernie knew that many times lost ones came back on their own, as Annie had. She hoped this would be true with Mr. Cruz. Sometimes the people being sought failed to return on purpose, the weight of responsibility and unhappiness pushing them into a place of despair so deep and lonely they forgot that their relatives still cared about them.
Did he have a weapon?
Yes, a knife and a gun.
Bernie felt her cell phone vibrate as she approached her unit. Sandra, the Shiprock substation dispatcher and her friend, was on the line.
Are you done out there? Captain Largo has something for you.
Not yet. There's a new development, she explained. Sandra's voice came in clear and strong.
Wow, I'm glad that girl is safe. I'll tell the captain. Will you be somewhere with phone reception for a few minutes so he can talk to you?
Sure. I'm calling for search and rescue now, and I'll give Largo an update after that. In New Mexico, the state police resource officer, based in Albuquerque, is the person with whom official search and rescue operations begin. Bernie described the situation to the coordinator, gave directions to the group campsite, and asked him to inform law enforcement assigned to the Malpais National Monument and the BLM, who managed the conservation area. How long do you think it will be before the team gets here? Bernie asked. The voice on the phone was calm.
I think the quickest will be 2 or 3 hours. Can you or someone stay at the youth camp until the state police officer comes? Officer Manzanares will be dispatched from Grants.
Bernie relayed the question to Cooper. The director shook her head.
I'll stay as long as I can, but I have to get the other campers back to their families.
Bernie relayed Cooper's information to the coordinator.
If the program director has to leave, I'll wait here until the officer arrives. He'll see my unit in the parking area.
I hope my captain doesn't give me any grief.
The coordinator chuckled.
I know Largo. Have him call me.
Bernie ended the call.
Thank you for handling that, Cooper said. What happens now?
We wait.
The state police officer will talk to us and then launch the search.
She explained how the officer would assess the situation and contact a regional incident commander to activate teams of trained volunteers who lived in the area. The teams would then put their everyday lives on pause, organize gear, load up, and head out with the goal of getting to the area to be searched and setting up a command center there as rapidly as possible. Cooper nodded.
That gives Cruz more time to come back. He'd be embarrassed about causing a fuss, but it also means more time to suffer if he's hurt out there. I'm not going to think about that.
They'll want to start the search at the last place Cruz was known to have been.
That's up there at the base camp where I saw him leave, hiking down the trail to the parking area. He planned to cross the highway and head out into the lava.
Did you notice anything different about him today? Anything he said or did?
It's hard to explain. He's always professional,
but it seemed like there was something on his mind all week that took away some of his focus.
Did he say anything unusual?
Not really. As we were driving, he mentioned the political game all of us agencies have to play to get money from the government. He said he enjoyed working with me, and that he appreciated all the time and energy I gave the program.
Cooper zipped her jacket against a gust of wind.
On the other end of the age spectrum, there are 12 lively reasons in this camp to be distracted, but Dom had dealt with it all before. The Rain Song girl, for instance, the one he went to find, is a hard case.
I want to talk to her.
Cooper nodded once. She's not much of a talker. And now, besides the stress of getting lost, I think she's still shaken from her vision state.
Vision state?
That's part of the solo. The girls come here to think about their future, their past, how to dismantle or navigate the obstacles in the way of their happiness and success, however they define it. We talk about all that and do some outdoor skills work in preparation for the solo. The idea is to let them calm down, get more introspective, be at peace when they are alone. A staff member helps each girl find a special campsite for herself, and she spends about 24 hours alone. We make them leave cell phones, music players, video games, all that in the van. Only a tent, a sleeping bag, water, a flashlight, some snacks, and their own thoughts out there with them.
Do they actually experience a vision?
If things go like we want them to, the kids have insights.
Cooper shrugged.
Sometimes a spirit animal visits them as a guide. Sometimes they hear a voice giving them advice or hope. Like I said, when it gets light, Cruz or Mayfair or I come for them at the solo site. Then they pack up their tents and hike back here for our group breakfast and a circle of sharing.
Cooper put her pack back on.
I need to hike back to the campsite for our closing ritual. You're welcome to join us and say a few words. I'm sorry you didn't get to give your talk. And no hamburgers today. All this commotion has put us way behind schedule.
No problem. I need to wait down here for the search team.
After Cooper headed off, Bernie called the Shiprock substation and learned that Largo had stepped out. She chatted a moment with her friend in dispatch.
How did your talk go? Sandra asked.
Best talk ever. Because of all the commotion with the girl and Mr. Cruz, I didn't have to give it. I'd rather deal with a missing person any day.
That poor man. And the young girl who was lost out there. She must have been scared. And now she's probably thinking this is all her fault.
After Sandra signed off, Bernie dialed Chi's cell phone, surprised that she had service, and disappointed when the call went to voicemail. She left a "call me" message, and then changed into her hiking boots and locked the unit. She'd noticed the white van with a Wings and Roots logo on the side when she first pulled into the parking area, the only vehicle besides her own. Now she realized that the driver's side door was slightly ajar. She closed it, hoping that the battery still had some juice. Cooper, Mayfair, and the girls didn't need any more complications. Three girls were hiking down the trail toward the parking lot, carrying duffels. The last one of them was Annie. The girls set the bags by the truck, and then the other two headed back up the mesa as Annie stepped toward Bernie.
Mrs. Cooper said I should talk to you.
The girl looked as though she'd been crying.
Let's go over there.
Bernie walked toward an empty picnic table.
Why do you want to talk to me? I didn't mean to get lost.
Annie's voice trembled.
It's about Mr. Cruz.
The girl was silent.
Sit down with me a minute. You've had a rough morning.
Annie lowered herself onto the bench across from Bernie and rested her head in her hands. The sunlight added a sheen to the girl's straight black hair. She had chipped purple polish on her nails and silver and turquoise rings on various fingers. With her head bent, her hair created a curtain around her face that moved when she spoke.
I didn't do anything.
You're not in trouble.
Really?
Annie looked up. Gold balls paraded around her earlobes, from small to larger.
Mrs. Cooper said Mr. Cruz got lost because of me.
What do you think?
Cooper hates me. She's a witch, and I hate her more.
Annie reached for a water bottle emblazoned with the program logo.
If I tell you something, will you have to tell her?
That depends on what it is. Annie rolled the bottle between her hands, and when she put it down, Bernie noticed a tattoo of a skull on her wrist. She rose from the bench, graceful as a fawn, and paced for a moment.
I guess it doesn't matter if you tell her, she said as she came back. The witch already thinks I'm a hopeless loser because I screwed up my solo. Did she tell you about it? I mean the rules, how it was supposed to work?
I'd like you to tell me. Build a little rapport, Bernie thought, and maybe Annie's story would offer a clue to finding Cruz. Annie picked at a cuticle.
Well, okay. We all had our own vision site, and Ms. Mayfair, she's the one who does the work around here, she said we could walk around until it got dark, and then we had to stay put until it got light again. We could think about things, take a nap, sing to ourselves, whatever. In the morning, everyone would come back to talk about what happened. Then Mr. Cruz hiked out with me.
So after Mr. Cruz left, you were out there alone?
I thought it sounded lame, but it was all right at first. I heard ravens making those sounds, you know, kind of like voices. I saw a deer. I walked around a little and saw some prayer sticks, but I didn't touch them. I came back to the vision site, but I thought it was stupid. And then I was starving, and it was so boring and weird. I had a headache. I tried to sleep, but I felt all nervous, cramped up, you know? I hated that stupid little tent. It smelled like old feet. I took my sleeping bag outside, and that was better. Then it got dark, and I got cold. I started hearing crazy noises, and that freaked me out. And then the moon came up, and that was worse than the dark, because there were all these bizarro shadows. Things would move out there, you know? Like maybe trees or a hawk or something scary with shiny eyes. I didn't know if that was my vision, you know, or if all this stuff was really happening.
Bernie pictured the scene. Blessedly quiet except for Ma'i, the coyote, the quiet of a winter night broken by the call of the trickster. Perhaps if the wind were right, she'd hear the muted, faraway roar of a big truck on the highway. She imagined watching the sunset and then seeing the night sky alive with its winter banner of stars, stars you couldn't see in Farmington, Gallup, or even Shiprock. She pictured the moonrise. The hours of peaceful solitude sounded wonderful to her. No television, no cell phone, no police scanners, no reports to write. So how did you get lost? Annie stood again, paced, hugged herself.
They told us not to leave the vision site no matter what, but I had to get out of there, you know? I had to get back to base camp before I went crazy or got eaten by something or died from hunger. So what if the other girls or Mrs. Cooper thought I was a loser, a freak? So what? But now, well, but now I only wish...
Bernie heard the girl's voice crack. Let me say this back to you. You were frightened and hungry out there, so you decided to come back to base camp, right? Annie picked up her plastic bottle and took a long, slow drink.
I ran out of there as fast as I could. I didn't mean to get lost. I was...
Annie raised both hands, palms open.
I don't know how to say it.
Is that how you got lost? The girl nodded.
I thought I could get to camp, but instead everything looked different than when I walked out there. I couldn't see the trail. Everything turned weird in the dark, even with my stupid flashlight. After a long time, I stopped and just stood there, bawling my eyes out. That's when I found the cave, because the moon was brighter now and the light was, you know, like, leading me up there. I thought maybe that was my vision, and if I died in there from hunger or something, at least my body wouldn't be out in the open for bugs and animals to eat.
Annie stood again and returned to pacing.
So I crawled in, just barely in, and waited. I didn't want to fall asleep, but when I opened my eyes, the sky had changed from black to gray. That's when...
Annie stopped moving and stared at her boots. That's when something else happened. Annie nodded. Bernie could read fear in the way the girl's body tensed. Take a breath. Bernie took a breath, too, considering how to proceed. Did Mr. Cruz find you out there and do something he shouldn't have?
No way! No bleeping way!
Annie yelled the words.
The dude is way chill, and that's too creepy. Besides that, he's gay. Has he come back yet?
No. Annie pushed her hair out of her eyes.
I know he came to look for me because he promised that he would when he dropped me off. It's my fault that he got lost.
The girl rose to her feet again.
Why don't you go out and look for him? I can't talk to you anymore.
If he doesn't come back soon, a whole bunch of people will search for him. Bernie consciously slowed her rate of speaking. You know, I've had experiences I don't like to talk about. Things that scared me. Things I couldn't make sense of. Like what happened to you in that cave. She softened her tone a bit more. Discussing it helped me figure out what was going on. Why don't you tell me what scared you? Start at the beginning. Annie squared her shoulders.
I'm not sure what it was.
Bernie waited.
When I got to the cave, the moon let me see inside a little. I got on my knees to shine my flashlight into it in case there was a bear or something. I didn't see anything, but it smelled kind of funny. The cave had a little ledge, so when I thought it was safe to lie down, I kept my head on the ledge so I could see if there was something, you know, coming for me. And because of the stink. In the morning, as I was waking up, I noticed a big pinyon tree, one with two trunks. I thought it might have nuts that I could eat to keep from dying because I already ate those dumb little snacks.
The girl grew quiet and then picked up the story, her tone changing. I stretched out my legs, you know, from the ledge into the dark part of the cave. My foot pushed against a hard thing, and I pulled away. I looked in the cave again, and I felt a chill, you know, like there was something evil in there. I could see that the cave went back a lot farther than I realized. Then I saw an old rope. When I picked it up, it wasn't a rope. It was a beat-up sandal, you know, the kind woven out of yucca. I put it back, and that's when I saw the other thing.
Bernie waited for her to continue, but she sat frozen in place.
What did you see?
Annie put her hands on her cheeks and then over her mouth. Was it alive?
Annie shook her head. Talk to me. Tell me about what you saw.
I don't know how to say it.
The girl's voice had an edge of hysteria now.
It looked like old bones. I was in a cave of bones.
Bernie knew the Malpais was dotted with lava caves. Despite what Mrs. Cooper had said about Annie's lying, this part of her story rang true. Could you find that cave again?
I don't want to go back there ever again. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Annie leaned away from her.
What if I hallucinated it? What if the bones were my stupid vision?
From the way you've described it, the experience really happened. Bernie pulled out her notebook and jotted down the sketchy details of Annie's cave of bones. If these were human bones, an ancestor of the Diné or Laguna or Acoma or Zuni people, or even Bilagana settlers, they deserved respect. She hadn't heard of Navajo burials in the lava, but the Raymah Navajo land bordered the Malpais. The Big Rez, the major reservation for the Navajo Nation, was farther west than north. No matter. This wasn't the kind of thing people talked about anyway.
If Annie had stumbled upon an ancient native burial, the family would have interred the dead one with the traditional gifts. Annie hadn't mentioned seeing anything except the bones and the sandal. What happened next?
I ran out of there, away from those bones. But I knew that Mr. Cruz would be looking for me, so I sat on a rock for a while, until it got light, so I could find a trail if I had to. And then I started moving, and I saw some stuff, you know, that